You know I be in the be in the town all day. I be in the be in the SEA. You know I be in the be in the town all day. I be in the be in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to episode number 146 of the Fabulous Pelton Cast. I'm your co-host Kevin Pelton,
and I'm Tristan Caracino,
and we are coming to you from Renton, Washington, home of the Super Bowl 48 champion Seattle Seahawks. You know, I did a whole thing about famous number 45s last week, and we never even got to it. Shouts to Kenny Easley. But, like, weirdly, Terry Mulholland, who pitched, like, half a season for the Mariners, was the first person I thought of.
At 45?
I did not look up anything about 46.
I can't think of anybody.
Maybe Jason Chorak? Did Jason Chorak wear 46?
If you're right about that, like, I'm going to be shocked. I'm pretty sure he was number 99, though.
All right, I'm going to have to look this up now. While I'm doing that, why don't you tell us about this week's beer?
Well, this beer's a little bit intense.
Is it?
The Stone Grapefruit Slam IPA. Shouts to Onyx. a zesty double India pale ale with, are you saying you're right about Jason Chorak?
100% correct.
God, of course you are.
I don't know why this upsets you so much.
It's just like there's never been a more Kevin Pelton moment than knowing what number Jason Chorak wore. Not a single person listening to this knows who that is.
That's not true.
Anyway. Apparently it's limited, says that at the top.
It does say that.
From our good friends.
I'll buy any beer that says it's limited.
No matter what it says.
The marketing for this one was right up
there. That's all they need to do is just put that limited on there. Anyway, a zesty double IPA with grapefruit peel.
That's a double IPA? Oh, I didn't realize it was that intense.
Yeah, we're talking 8% alcohol here. From our good friends at Stone Brewing in San Diego, California. Let's crack this open.
We should, because we have a toast to get to in a second here. And it's not to Jason Chorak, sadly, although... we can toast to him as well. A fine Husky who went on to play in the NFL. So, shouts to Jason Chorak.
You came full circle on the Jason Chorak toast. You're like, not to Jason Chorak, but also toast to Jason Chorak.
No, the real toast, though, is to Jack Sikma, who was announced last Friday as a finalist for the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame.
Really?
He is one of a handful of first-time finalists on the ballot, along with two other people with Sonics ties, strangely. Paul Westfall, player and coach for the Sonics. Not very popular in either of those roles, but sure did them both. And Marcus Johnson, longtime color analyst alongside Kevin Calabro.
Who's he working with?
The Bucks, where he's out there citing advanced stats.
Is
Marcus
really?
Johnson is the best.
Marcus is citing...
Oh, yeah.
What does he say? Yaka! There we go. Well, let's give a yakka to
Marcus.
So Jack Sikma, he's a finalist for the Hall of Fame.
So they announced this is, it's kind of a two-step process. There are 13 finalists that were selected this year. There's no specific number. It's not like the baseball system where you get a certain number of votes. We also don't know who votes on it. It's a committee that's, you know, very secretive behind closed doors. That will select some number of these people as finalists, and those will be announced at the Final Four in April. And look, if it's going to happen for Jack Sikma, I think this is probably the year. There's no first-timers on the ballot.
It's like a secret board of shadowy figures.
Yes.
Okay.
There's no first-timers on the ballot. Chris Webber, I think, is nearly a lock to get in, is kind of the one person who's been on the ballot repeatedly and the most prominent.
This is the Basketball Hall of Fame.
Yes.
Okay. It has nothing to do with college basketball.
It encompasses basketball at all levels.
All basketball. Yes. Okay. From the peach basket on.
Yes. But obviously, NBA most prominently, factoring into who's selected. And I made the case a few years ago in an Insider, then now ESPN Plus piece, that Sikma was... you know, perhaps the most deserving player who was not in the Hall of Fame.
Really?
Seven-time All-Star. There's only one player who's been an All-Star seven times besides him who is not in the Hall of Fame. And he was back in the 50s when there was like, you know, or early 60s when there was like eight teams. So it was pretty easy to be an All-Star relative to in the 1980s when Jack Sikma was doing it.
Well, attention, secret board of shadowy figures. Attention, Jerry Reinsdorf, whoever is running this process.
I don't think Jerry Reinsdorf
is
running.
He's the dude who got in Tim Raines or whatever. You remember that? Not Tim Raines. Harold Baines.
Is he?
Yeah, he was like on the board for the baseball
thing.
Oh, I
didn't know this
story. Attention.
Okay.
Keep up. Attention, every single person who is voting on this. Jack Sikma deserves to be in the Hall of Fame.
Absolutely. And if you want to put Marcus Johnson in there with him, all the better. Having given that toast... I think we should jump right into the ramen bracket.
You know what? I wanted to follow up on a story that we had last week first.
Oh, okay.
So I had mentioned third Pelton brother, Reese. He gave his recipe for Top Ramen last week.
Yes.
And he was in Mexico City this last week eating at Pujol, the number 13 restaurant in the world.
Huh.
By the way, that's not what I'm going to talk about, though. He texted me on Friday. Fun fact, they sell tons of cup noodles at luchador matches.
Really?
Look at this. I'm showing you a photo. This is the concession stand at a luchador match with the only concession that you can see is instant ramen noodles. There were vendors bringing them around to the seats, beer and peanut style.
That's amazing. First off, that seems like a very inconvenient thing. I mean, certainly, I guess you could think of more inconvenient things, but it doesn't seem like the safest thing to eat while in the stands watching Lucha Libre. But it also
Pozole,
looks...
not Pujol, Pozole.
It also looks like the photo that we posted last week that the famous Cousin Katie took of the shelves at the nearby Safeway after the storm, where all you could see was cup noodles. But in that case, it's because everyone had already purchased all the instant ramen in packages.
Yeah. In this case, apparently it's all that you need. Like the places that I want to go to, shouts to Charleston, which we're going to be talking about soon. Like there's like Nashville, number one, Charleston, number two, Mexico City, like leapt up and jumped like 13 cities.
Specifically because of the cup noodles?
Like Raleigh, Durham, like boom, of cities that I want to go to.
Raleigh, Durham's up there?
I really want to go to the American Southeast, as you could tell. Oh. But Mexico City hopped a lot of Chattanooga, Tallahassee, Columbia, South Carolina.
I drove through Columbia. It didn't seem like there was a lot.
Mexico
going
City
on there.
Jumped up above a lot of those just because of this ramen.
Huh. Okay. Well, shouts to Third Pelton brother Reese for keeping us updated on instant ramen throughout the North American continent. Not just in the U.S.
He needs to be in Banff pretty soon to update us on what ramen's like again. Anyway, we should get into the South End Regional of Seattle's search, or the Peltoncast search for Seattle's best ramen with our good friend Michael Sawyer.
For this South End edition of the Ramen Bracket, there was only one person to bring in. We are going to have two and possibly two and a half Tai Totems on this podcast for today's ramen matchup. We welcome to the pod Tai graduate and prominent member of Seahawks Twitter, Michael Sawyer. Thanks for joining us.
I've been waiting forever to say this, Kevin, but you're in Totems territory now.
Oh, man. So I say two and a half. Obviously, Tristan is also a Tai graduate. I attended classes at Tai while I was at nearby Chinook Middle School. I took some math classes down there before school started at Chinook. So I'm like kind of got some Tai, even though I ended up going to Mount Rainier High School.
There's Tai in your blood. You can't avoid it.
It's true. It's absolutely
so. But Kevin, did you take classes up the hill in the little portable, or did you have to actually walk down the hill?
900 building, baby.
The parking lot.
Yeah, they were, I think, in the portable.
Sift through the Southern California designed circular buildings to actually go to a class.
Yeah, we had that issue when I was at Mount Rainier, too, where it was four separate buildings.
Oh, we don't want to hear about Mount Rainier on this podcast. Nobody wants to know what things were like there. Tell us about what it was like when you were at Tai High School, when ESPN's Kevin Pelton attended Tai High School.
Well, it was very early, for one thing, because you know, everyone else was starting school 45 minutes later, and I had to be there at like 7:25 when school started at Tai. That was the main annoyance, I think.
Hold on, I'm just updating the Tai Wikipedia to list you as notable alumni.
Well, I mean, the Mount Rainier page doesn't include me, so we may as well start somewhere, I guess. Who's on that list?
Gary Ridgway, the Green River Killer.
Okay.
Congressman Adam Smith.
Yep.
Steve Poole. And Nick, quote, Century Serlincioni, professional pizza connoisseur and Amazon representative since 2017, who definitely added himself on there. Come on, Nick.
Yeah, I feel like you belong on that list ahead of this next.
It's both me and Michael Sawyer.
You gotta at least put like a shout out to Stacey Ross because she works what over at 710 right. ESPN right now. I mean that's famous right there.
Yeah,
that's a level of what's the opposite of infamy? Like fummy or like?
I mean, by definition, it must be.
So, surprised that this guy Nick made the cut above all of us. I mean, man.
Well, none of those people were man enough to join us here on the PeltonCast, but you were, Michael Sawyer, to help us choose the winner of the 3-6 matchup, a battle of two South End Titans between Tokyo Ya Ramen and Federal Way. That was the number 3 seed and the number 6 seed, Arashi Ramen, both in Tukwila, and then also a location in Ballard, which we do not mention on this podcast.
Yeah, because the original location is in Tukwila. And I believe, if I recall correctly, that Arashi, you requested to have whatever matchup it was going to have in the first round. Is that right?
I did. I think we would be remiss, though, if I didn't take credit for the entire ramen bracket in the first place. So I think that needs to be – the accounts need to be settled on that score.
I'm willing to give it to you.
Okay. All right.
I think multiple people have claimed credit for it because there was a tweet that happened in like, you know, early January, right before we officially announced it, like the day that we initially announced it, that someone...
I know the Axiomotician definitely mentioned it.
That sounds right. But I think you did predate that in terms of...
Are you searching for ramen?
Oh,
bracket?
No, actually, I think it's the opposite, actually.
Oh, no.
The Axiomatician posted it in November. When are you going to tell me what the best ramen in Seattle is? And it was you in December, the literal ones of people pining for the PeltonCast ramen brackets. We'll give you half credit on that one.
Okay. All right. We'll Axiomatician and I will fight it out.
Okay, so but what about Arashi made you want to definitely be involved in the review here?
I've always just like... It's in that kind of area of South Center where it's so easy to drive by it just because there's so many different little holes in the wall places. And South Center has changed, I mean, so much since, you know, back in our day, when there wasn't a giant glass edifice growing out of the mall.
But when there was a Taco Time Northwest.
Shouts to the Taco right. Time in the food court.
Shouts to Third Pelton brother Chris Smith who was working there.
But
yes, we've got a lot more high-end, particularly a lot of Asian cuisine in the South Center area now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Arashi's kind of one of those. And I've always just been a fan of them. And I thought that, you know, I'm sure that they're a lot of the places that are in the bracket that are in like Capitol Hill and Seattle proper are places that I have not had the chance to go to. But I just didn't want the Southenders to get left out of here.
Absolutely. And I can't tell whether it was good or bad. We tweeted about this when it first happened, putting the two South End entrants against each other. On the downside, it means that they can't both advance to the semifinals. But on the other hand, it guarantees that one of them will advance to the semifinals unless something goes really horribly wrong with the voting later on.
It's almost like a Butler-Wichita State matchup.
Right. No, that's
in the
exactly
first round.
It. Yes. Yeah. Which I remember exactly. Joe Sheehan in particular railing against back in the early part of the decade.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You could set it up like that. This is but then you're saying that this is like the mid-major of ramen matchups and I don't take lightly to that kind of disrespect.
I mean, I think it's fair in terms of exposure because of the fact that they're not going to get
you
the same attention
true,
as the locations.
Like, I feel like Arashi has a lot of exposure.
It gets a decent amount, a solid amount of exposure. I mean, it's on all the lists.
Is it not quite a Gonzaga level yet where they're they're not there yet. They're not a perennial mid-major powerhouse.
I mean, Gonzaga would probably have to be a one seed, quite frankly, if we're being honest here. Oh. The thing I posted about on Instagram
terrible ramen, though.
When I went to Arashi was like the thing about this ramen bracket, why it's a foolish experiment for us to undertake in the first place, is because everyone has their local place that they love and think is better than everything else, because that's kind of what defines ramen for them. And for me in particular, and I think I would say for Tristan as well, like Arashi has been that. It's the ramen place in Seattle that I had by far been to the most before we started this bracket.
Yeah, for me, like, it was a, you know, I've been to Shibu a lot. They have a little shop over in the Kent Station area. But, you know, I've gone to Arashi plenty of times to know that, like, Shibu is not quite in the same stratosphere as Arashi. But yeah, I totally get what you're saying. Like ramen is a local thing. But, you know, so essentially you're just pitting communities against one another. So congratulations on that.
That's what we're about.
That's never backfired once.
The Pelton cast continuing to bring people together.
I mean, look, what is Seahawks Twitter if not dividing people over food?
Either that or running the ball, one or the other.
Exactly. Yeah, at no point can we say that all ramen is good. We have to specifically rank ramens. And that's what we're going to do here today. Michael, let's start with Arashi, the underdog here, the sixth seed in this bracket. What did you go with at Arashi?
So I went with I'm kind of the opinion that you get kind of the thing that the place of business wants you to get. Absolutely. Or like that they put their name on. So
that's a Pelton cast general rule of thumb.
Yeah. I got the Arashi ramen. And I actually, and it's kind of my go-to, though. And I had always done extra noodles, but my wife actually has the better idea, obviously, that you do the, because you can have two kinds of noodles at Arashi. You can have like the thin noodles, which I usually just got double of, but she gets the wide, thicker noodles and gets an extra egg. And I think that one of the things that is terribly underrated about a good ramen is the quality of the egg in the broth and what, and like how you can like add richness and flavor to a broth with a really perfectly cooked egg yolk. And having two of those instead of just one really kind of puts it over the top for me. So in terms of like how to order, how you should order ramen, because, you know, you can do whatever you want, but how I order ramen.
And so is that what you had this time? You had the Arashi ramen with the wide noodles and two eggs?
Yeah.
I like it.
Okay, now you said that you were going to follow the same convention that I have in terms of scoring these locations out of 10 on broth, noodles, and then the chashu pork belly.
Yes.
Did you rate Arashi's ramen?
I gave their broth a 7 out of 10. I'm a big fan of like really bold flavors. So like tonkatsu is right up my alley in those terms. Their noodles, the wide noodles is what gives me, like I do, I wanted to say 9 out of 10, but I decided to kind of backtrack that to an 8 out of 10. But I'm really high on the wide thick noodles. And then their chashu is good. They give you a good amount of it, but it's not seared to my liking. And so, you know, it's 7 out of 10. It's solid, good portion, tastes good, but, you know, it's not quite the sear that I really like on a really good, well-prepared chashu.
This is interesting because your ratings are very different.
They're so different
on these categories than mine. So I went 8 out of 10 on broth. I think it is good flavor.
You're a homer when it comes to the Arashi ramen. I'm sorry. I don't mean to jump in here, but their broth is bad.
Their broth is not bad.
Their broth is...
Really?
It is probably the Arashi ramen. Like, they're different kinds. And it needed more spice. But to me...
You should have ordered one that was spicier.
I'm trying to go with, like, their signature ramen. It's the Arashi damn ramen. Like, what the hell?
But you also have to go with what you know you like. I mean, that's the point of this exercise, is to determine what we like in ramen.
It doesn't explicitly say, like, you can add spice to this, which I should have done. But to me, the ramen as it was, the broth, was like a 4 out of 10. It was extremely bland.
You give it the same rating I gave the other
Marjan top broth.
Yeah, you're giving it the same rating I gave that broth.
See, the issue that you have, Tristan, is you just needed an extra egg in there and everything would have been great.
I needed something else. It needed just more kick to it. It was like eating just kind of like a repetitive thing that's like it's there but it doesn't hit you in any way.
That's why you eat the different things that are in there.
It's the instrumental music of ramen.
Okay. But the noodles got my lowest score here. I gave them a 6 out of 10. I find that they're kind of a bit stringy and tend to stick together. So clearly I need to be trying the thicker noodles, which I really hadn't even considered.
Thick noodles is a possibility. Like that's a good sneak.
It really makes it that much better. Like if you were to just do the regular noodles, they're fine. Like for me, like that's why I got double noodle in the first place all the time, was just because I was like, well, these noodles are fine, but I need more of them.
The food is so bad here. It's such small portions.
But yeah, the wider noodles have more flavor for sure. And they have a much better texture.
Well, that's one to keep in mind going forward. But I also gave this the highest score of any ramen location that we've rated so far, which is going to be 6 out of 10. I've also been to a 7th one, so I know how that rates. A 9 out of 10 on the chashu for Arashi, which I think is actually the strength of their ramen, because it's just like the right texture, I think, that I want in my pork belly.
Okay. I can see that. Like I can see a 9 out of 10. Cause it tastes really good. The chashu itself tastes really good, and they give you a good portion.
Yep.
Like that's important too. I'm just like, I just wish that at least in the bowl that I had, that there was a little bit more sear on it. And then that would have really done it for me.
I think the chashu is the best thing that they're doing to me. Like it's not fatty, it's flavorful, it's present. I liked it quite a bit, but otherwise, I mean, I didn't have the Y noodles. It was just the regular noodles, which I would agree. It's like, I felt like the broth was pretty bland, felt like the noodles were kind of just there. The chashu was the only thing that kind of stood out to me in any way, but otherwise this was just, it was a workmanlike bowl of ramen.
That's underrated.
But can I interject here? There's a ramen place that I heard about today in Wallingford called Ramen Man Noodle House, where they will give you unlimited eggs.
Unlimited eggs?
Wow.
Ask them for 10 eggs in your ramen, and I guess they give them to you on the side. And you just dump them in there.
Wow. Wow.
They made the whole plate out of the eggs.
That's a game changer.
Yeah, you could basically just get scrambled eggs ramen.
I don't know if I would quite say that. But that's only a 3.5 stars on Yelp.
Eggs any way you like them.
It's actually a breakfast place.
But I feel like that's out of curiosity, I'm going to have to go to this place, right?
Mm-hmm.
Are we going to have to go to Kazuki Ramen to evaluate them outside of the bracket?
The people have kind of spoken.
I don't know if you need to. I mean, I've been to the one in Lake Hills in Bellevue, and they're all kind of like because they're all like based off the same company. Like kind of parent company. And so I assume that they're all pretty similar, and they're fine. Like it's not, like it tastes good, but it doesn't like blow you away in any particular way that like, oh, I can't get this anywhere else but Bellevue and West Seattle and all of the other places that you can find one.
It's like an entry level ramen.
I would describe that as a workmanlike bowl of ramen, but Mrs. Fantasy Genius, yeah, is, she tweeted us over the weekend, it disagrees.
Ooh.
So let's talk about Tokyo Ya in Federal Way, which is a similar type of thing that you're talking about with South Center, where there's an 85 degree bakery right next door to it. There's like a pho restaurant right next door to that. There's a Thai restaurant right next door to that. And I'm like, all I know about 320th and Federal Way is Black Angus. So
you're not getting far enough down. You're not going far enough all the way down to Pak Island.
I didn't have enough Jan with me. If Jan would have been with me, I would not have made it past the Black Angus.
Yeah, there's an H Mart right there too. That's got a bunch of really good little things to grab. I know a friend of mine who, she gets she gets her kimchi from there all the time.
So I was pretty impressed with Tokyo Ya Ramen. Had you been there before, Michael?
I had not, actually. I had heard of it, and I didn't know, like, I heard Federal Way, and so I was like, oh, it's, like, by the old SeaTac Mall. And I got, by the way, it's never the Commons. It is always going to be the SeaTac Mall.
It's not called the SeaTac Mall anymore?
I think it's called, like, the Commons at Federal Way or something, like, bland and late-stage capitalist-y.
Wow.
It's like calling it Westfield Shopping Dad Says Center when it was briefly that.
When it's
I mean, it's still Westfield. The shopping town got removed.
If we can't go to a dollar movie on, like, a Tuesday over the summer at the SeaTac Mall, which is somehow in Federal Way, what is life even anymore?
Oh, it's $2 now. It's not a dollar. It's
okay.
That's reasonable.
I'm okay with that inflation.
I had always kind of figured it was in that area, not quite closer to Federal Way High School, but it's a nice little spot. I went there right before the Super Bowl, like about an hour before the Super Bowl. So right as the snow started to fall.
I also went there right as the snow started to fall. That was the following Friday. I guess there was a lot of periods where you could go right before snow started to fall in the last few weeks here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was though right before the end of innocence for the Seattle area.
We were so young and naive and looking forward to snow then.
Yes, but unfortunately, like, I wasn't as impressed with the ramen as I was with kind of everything else. Like, their ambiance was nice; it was a nice little spot. I always try to, like, get some tea, and then I start off with some gyoza, and then I do the ramen. That's kind of like, the gyoza is like the fries to the burger for me. I can't really have one without the other.
don't even dare talk about which kind of fries you like also.
Ben would tell you to order a second bowl of ramen instead.
But anyway, I think that the broth was great, but everything else just kind of like let me down. I had the tonkatsu miso, which is kind of the one where they're like most popular on their menu. So I decided to get that one with the corn, and a bit of a hot take on corn and ramen. I know, like, earlier, Tristan, you had mentioned that ground beef or ground pork, you hate it because it sinks to the bottom of the ramen. You don't get it till the very end. And corn, and like, I was eating the bowl of ramen, and then I got to the bottom of the bowl, and all the corn was on the bottom, and I thought, I understand now.
That's like one of the most depressing moments when you get to the bottom and you find just a shitload of corn. Like, who needs corn in ramen? Come on, end the corn in ramen. I totally agree.
Yeah,
I kind of like.
So that was a mistake on that one. Their broth I thought was really good. It didn't have as strong of a flavor as Arashi's, but it had like a little bit of a hint of spice on the end that I was able to pick up, and I thought kind of rounded it out, so it wasn't quite as it was a much more flavorful broth for me, so I ended up giving that an 8 out of 10. The noodles I was not impressed with. I thought that those were just okay. I was kind of left wanting more. Maybe I should have just gotten more noodles like I always do, but I ended up giving that a 5 out of 10. I was not as impressed with the noodles. And for the chashu, I ended up giving this a 5 out of 10. Even though I liked how they prepared it, there was just two little pieces of pork in there. And this is 2019, people. Like, you can give me some more than that.
That's interesting, because apparently the pork was slightly different in the spicing, which I got. And I think you also got,
yes.
Tristan.
And so Katie got the miso tonkatsu. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And same as you got the spicy negi, and it was prepared completely differently. Like, the pork in the spicy negi was like broken up, little bits of it in it. It was just not the same for you.
It
was like broken up. But for Katie, she had the thick pieces and she felt like they were really fatty. Like, she felt like they were, her description of the chashu was horrible.
Hmm.
Right.
Oh yeah.
I
was not a huge fan of it. Like, there was a nice little sear on it, but there was a lot of fat on it, and it was just too small of a piece for me. Like, kind of the exact opposite of the chashu for me at Arashi, where it didn't have a sear on it, but it was not as fatty, much more flavorful, much bigger portion.
So I would say having it all split up, it made it much easier to eat, certainly, but it was less flavorful that way to me than if you got the larger pieces of pork belly. So I gave that a 4 out of 10, the lowest score I've given chashu at any of these locations that we've reviewed so far. However, I liked the rest of it much better. I gave the broth a 9 out of 10 on the spicy, because it was kind of a combination of creamy and spicy at the same time, which is, I think, what I've come to conclude that I like the most in a ramen broth. And I liked the noodles. I gave the noodles an 8 out of 10.
Okay.
So I thought they slurped up really well when I was eating them. I enjoyed that experience. How about you, Tristan?
Personally, I felt like this was probably the best bowl of ramen that I've had.
Wow.
Since we started this search for. And like, honestly, having this conversation makes me realize just how important it is what you're getting and that you're kind of customizing. You know, ramen is a food that small differences can make a huge difference flavor-wise. You know, what I did is I did the spicy negi, and I did it as 2 spices also. So I added a little bit of extra spice to it, and it was so flavorful. Every single spoonful of it. The broth was excellent. I thought the noodles were also good, and it was a healthy portion of noodles too. Whereas, like, this is a big bowl of ramen that we've got here. I thought the chashu was really flavorful when eating it, and like having it broken up that way was kind of nice, because sometimes when you get the big pieces, they're just kind of like, you'll get a huge piece and then a little tiny one, but this was a little bit more evenly separated. To me, this was a near perfect bowl of ramen.
Near perfect. Wow.
And I pined for it. I had it yesterday and I wanted another bowl of that ramen today.
Huh?
So,
Michael, what did you say that you got again?
It was spicy negi, N-E-G-I.
Yeah.
Michael, for the 3-6 matchup, the South End edition of the Peltoncast search for Seattle's best ramen, what are you going with?
So, you know, we started off this conversation saying that ramen is like, very like your place and you like your place, and you also mentioned, Tristan, just a few minutes ago about small differences being the key to a good bowl of ramen. And I think that once you know what works at the place that you always go to, that's why it's always so good. And so I am going to go with Arashi over Tokyo Ya, just because I know the noodles I need to get. I know the extra egg makes the broth that much better. I went with Arashi.
So I'll say that Tokyo Ya might have had a bit of an advantage when I was going to it, because I was going to these locations one day apart, and I had felt like the Arashi ramen was bland, so I went super spicy, like as basically I possibly could, at the Tokyo Ya, which I really preferred. So it's like, maybe I wasn't giving Arashi a fair shake, but at the same time, Tokyo Ya completely delivered for me, and I had to go with them. Kevin, as the deciding vote in the 3-6 matchup of Seattle's search for Seattle's best ramen.
Seattle's search for Seattle's best ramen.
What is going to move on?
This is a tough situation for me to be in. I came in expecting Arashi to advance. It was, in my opinion, before we started this, the best ramen that I'd had in Seattle. Not that that was a wide amount of places. I'm going to continue going to it on a regular basis because there are many things that I love about Arashi. But I have to say, ultimately, given the importance of broth and noodles, I think over even as wide a disparity as it was in terms of chashu, like that's a relatively secondary aspect of ramen for me. And that's one thing, again, that this process has clarified, that the broth is the key distinguisher between locations, noodles secondary, and chashu way down below. So as a result, I'm taking Tokyo Ya ramen.
No. All right. Wow. Okay. So the thing is, I can understand, and also like, you guys had a different, totally different bowl of ramen than I did when I went there. So maybe it's all about what you know and what you order.
It's all reasons to go back and try more different things.
And Katie had, I think, a very similar experience to what you had ordering the same thing.
Yeah.
So I think that definitely what you order makes a big difference. But also, you've just confirmed, Kevin, that we're driving to Federal Way again.
Well, hopefully it won't snow repeated times, but yeah.
This is something that I said that I've been to LA more than I've been to Federal Way, and now you're making that untrue.
Well, I was worried for a period of time.
You didn't even stop at Del Taco.
Because I asked you beforehand, like, hey, is it okay if we put a location in Federal Way in the bracket? And then it took you like 3 weeks to get there, granted that there were externalities.
Look, I'm not at Highline Community College anymore. Federal Way isn't just like one more exit down the hill. It's a long way to go.
You know, South Center isn't that close to you either. These places are close to you. You live in the boonies.
Yeah, we should have a lot more ramens in the greater Renton area. Or around my office. That'd be a lot easier.
Instead, next week we're going to go to Lake City.
There we go.
I mean, you're going to go to Lake City. I've already actually been to Lake City, to this location.
And that is for...
That is for Aloha Ramen, one of the OGs of the Seattle scene. And then the last one we're going to go to, the most difficult to go to, Tsukishinbo, that only serves tonkatsu ramen on Friday. Only a limited number of bowls. People line up a half hour in advance.
So are they open other times?
They are open, yeah, but they just don't have ramen.
Okay.
Yes, it's not like they're only open one day a week for
and
lunch.
They
that would be a bad
serve
business
tonkatsu
model.
Ramen.
No, they'll serve the rest of the menu, I think.
But I mean, do they have other ramen? Is that the only ramen they have?
I think they do a miso ramen perhaps on another day, or maybe it's a shoyu. It's some other ramen on a different day, but their specialty is the tonkatsu that they serve on Friday.
Wow! I am fired up about this ramen.
I hope we get a bowl, otherwise the whole bracket is
I
off.
I hope we each get a bowl. You don't have to share it again. Slurp it Lady and the Tramp style and meet in the middle. Michael, I'm so sorry about Arashi. But I'm not sorry for you joining us here as Third Peloton Brother. Thank you so much.
Yeah, it makes it a little bit easier to if Arashi didn't get through, at least it didn't get through in Totem's territory.
That was a tough call.
I'm honestly shocked. Like we were talking. I like to set it up, if people are going to disagree, to have one person. You know, I didn't want like both of us to vote for the same ramen restaurant,
right,
and then have Michael's vote be moot. I'm like mouthing to you, what are you voting for? Because I thought you were voting for Arashi. I was prepared to have you vote for Arashi. But
I mean, it didn't matter what I was voting for. I still should have gone last because you knew that you were voting for something different than him.
But no, if you were voting for Arashi, I would want the Third Peloton Brother to be the guest or to be the deciding vote.
Oh, I guess that makes sense.
Yeah.
All right.
So that's why we went directly. I don't know if we should be explaining the process. But like, this is a complicated
really,
thing.
Really peeling back the curtains on the podcast here. Such elaborate planning. You mouthing something to me seconds before you discuss.
Mispronouncing but, very famous Mexican restaurants. Mouthing to you while we're doing a podcast.
But we, you know, we couldn't talk about it too much in advance. It would have ruined the entire thing.
Yeah. We're Bo Waltoning this podcast.
Very much so. Great feature on The Athletic Seattle by Jason Jenks going behind the scenes with Walton and Dave Cash at Day
Athletic
in the Life.
Should be in freaking Bingo Square.
I mean, they do good work. We're going to shout it out. Should we talk about...
Anyway, I told you we were going to talk about it.
Should we talk about Seattle Burger Month?
We're going to talk about this before. You're making me wait.
To talk about Charleston?
I just want to hear about Charleston.
Let's just get
okay, fine. Talk about burgers for a second.
So sadly, neither of us got there last week. No one's getting the tote unless we get it undeservedly.
Wow.
And believe me, I am going to give you so much shit if
you know
you
what?
Do.
I don't even want the tote undeservedly.
Wow. You're not going to turn down a tote. I'm turning down a tote.
I'm unclear what a burger tote is, so I don't know.
I couldn't get there because of the trip we're about to talk about, but I'm very excited to get to Lowoody's this week because the Burger Month, Seattle Burger Month Burger of the Week seems like an exciting one. Chef Mitch Myers of Sawyer in Ballard, Mitch's Burger, the deli burger, ingredients, the quarter pound patty that's typically on the Lowoody, pastrami, sliced red onions, iceberg lettuce, spicy kosher pickle, Russian dressing, cream cheese mornay, on an everything spice bun.
Sounds so good.
That is intriguing.
Give me Russian dressing just straight into my veins.
I feel like that'd be bad.
I love that that's right after we're talking about ramen, too. It's like there's probably no bigger variant flavor-wise, but let me... Russian dressing is so good. Anyway, That sounds great. I'm going to eat that this week. Tell me about Charleston. Come on. I've been waiting. We have literally not talked about this.
That is accurate. So I went last weekend to the NBA All-Star Game in Charlotte.
You're going to yada, yada, yada the All-Star Game.
Alaska does not fly to Charlotte.
Russell Westbrook is bad.
Alaska does fly to Charleston. So I hatched the plan to fly to Charleston, drive up to Charlotte the next day, and then drive back and fly in and
were
out.
You renting a car and driving yourself?
I was.
Wow.
Yeah. It was shockingly easy, all things considered.
How long is that drive?
3 hours, maybe 3:15.
Did you drive with anybody else?
No.
I just would never do that.
It's not something I'd done before, but...
I actually would do that if I could go to Charleston. I'd take it all back.
So I was super excited about this because I was previously thinking like, hey, while I'm out there, you know, on the other coast, I should consider going to Charleston for a couple days on the back end because of the fact that ever since reading Danny Chow's piece on The Ringer in 2017 about the barbecue scene in Charleston, I have been desperately wanting to go there.
Well, I mean, Charleston in general, not even just barbecue, right? Charleston's like one of the hottest food scenes there is in the country.
Without question. Yeah, I mean, I didn't, you know, obviously I had three meals there. I didn't come anywhere close to exhausting the Charleston food options and need to get back there again and try many other things. But so the places that Danny highlighted in his piece that I was really most excited to get to, number one, Rodney Scott Barbecue. So Rodney Scott had been cooking whole hog barbecue, that's his specialty, in this rural town in South Carolina for nearly three decades before opening up. He started to gain fame and participating in barbecue competitions around the country and then opened up this restaurant in Charleston in 2017. And has since won for that restaurant a James Beard Award. Like, he's been recognized as one of the top chefs in the country. So that was the first place I went on Thursday night, right after I got there, before going to see the College of Charleston play Hofstra in what was actually a very exciting game. Hofstra, who's the UW of their that conference, which I can't remember which conference it is off the top of my head.
Barbecue right now. Whole hog barbecue.
So I ordered the two meat plate with the pork and then the ribs, which is interesting. So
they're all part of the hog.
Rodney Scott hadn't cooked ribs before opening this place in Charleston. And, you know, according to Danny's article, they became the best seller there. And I would have to say, I agreed that they were the highlight of my meal. One thing I learned in this process, I'd never had really like... I'd never been to the Carolinas, so I'd obviously never had authentic Carolina-style barbecue sauce that's vinegar-based. And it turns out I don't like that. Not a fan. Wait,
what do you mean? Like, what does vinegar-based taste like? I thought this was a...
It tastes like vinegar.
I thought it was a sweet barbecue, though.
No.
Is that KC that would be like a sweeter barbecue?
Yes.
Okay. You've been to all these great barbecue places, and I've been to fucking Federal Way. God damn it.
You've been to Austin many times. We'll get to that in a second. I don't know. You may not be doing enough barbecue.
They didn't even let you have barbecue sauce in Austin.
But we'll get to that.
Extremely frowned upon. Were we talking about Austin in a second?
So just a giant thing of ribs to go along with the pork. And I thought that was the highlight of the meal.
Oh, man.
All right. So the next day.
What did you say about this barbecue? What was your review of it?
So the pork was... and like the way it's cooked is, you know, incredibly slowly over, you know, over a pit. And the texture of the pork was really fascinating. But again, I think I needed some sauce to go with it. This is often the case with pulled pork. And I just didn't really enjoy any of the sauce options that were there.
Okay.
So that wasn't the highlight for me, I would say. All right. So the next day for lunch before heading up to Charlotte, which you always like to eat barbecue before embarking on a three-hour drive, I went to Lewis Barbecue. And it's interesting. One of the fascinating things is Danny mentions in the piece, but you know, it didn't really grasp it until I was there. They're like off the same freeway exit. They're a half a mile apart, you know, basically down the same street, although you turn off some side streets after that. It's incredible how close these two places are, both doing these very different styles of amazing barbecue. So John Lewis cooked at the famed Franklin Barbecue in Austin before opening up Law Barbecue in 2012, which has become the biggest competitor to Franklin. And then in 2016, took Lewis Barbecue to Charleston.
Also involved in many notable sit-ins.
Really?
No, is that the dude's name, John Lewis? The, like, never mind. You don't even know.
Look, I'm only thinking about barbecue right now. So I went there for lunch on Friday. The cool thing is, oh, yes. Yes, of course. The cool thing is they have...
Nobody could see what I just showed you. That was you recognizing who John Lewis was.
Yes.
Yes.
North Carolina?
I think he's from Georgia.
Oh, that makes more sense. So the cool thing is they have, you know, these different meat options, and it's, you can order as much or as little as you want. So I kind of just went with the advice of...
As much?
No, because you... Okay, so I got a slice of brisket,
okay,
which obviously is their specialty. That's the Central Texas brisket that, you know, I like asked for a quarter pound and it came out to a third pound. And I was like, that's fine. A quarter pound of, they have sliced brisket. I got two smaller ribs. And then one of the things Danny highlighted in his piece is their green chili corn pudding, which is not it, like anything I'd ever had before, but I definitely wanted to try. And then I also got mac and cheese, and that turned out to be so much that...
You also got mac and cheese.
I got that boxed up to go. Like, I wasn't going to finish that at that
Describe
point.
Describe to me the green chili corn pudding.
So there's a lot of cheese in it. It's kind of like consistency. It's not as thick as cornbread, but, you know, it's getting kind of towards that. And then it's got the green chilies in that to give it a little kick. It was really good.
But, like, what does it come in?
It's like...
In a bowl that you eat it with a spoon, or it's like cornbread?
No, with a fork. You eat it with a fork. And it's like they cut out a square of it, basically. So that was quite good. But
God,
let me tell you, this was the best brisket I have ever had. And nothing has ever even come close to it. Like, we went to the Salt Lick and barbecue in Austin. No. That I was kind of mad. I've never been that big on Central Texas barbecue because I've always been kind of a sauce guy. Like, Kansas City really spoke to me more than Austin, but this was better than any barbecue I had in Kansas City.
And you had no sauce on it? You had it Texas style, like just the meat?
I put some sauce on the shredded brisket, not the actual slice of brisket. I just ate that on its own.
So this dude, John Lewis.
Yes.
Also founded La Barbecue in Austin. Okay, so I've never had La Barbecue. So most of the time that I've been to Austin quite a few times, but most of the time that I've been there has been during South by Southwest when it's a shit show to try to go to anywhere,
exactly,
especially anywhere downtown.
Have you ever had Franklin?
Never.
Okay,
so I've never had Franklin, and I've never had La. I've had the Salt Lick with you, and I've had various other barbecues, but it's like they've been fine.
I mean... This, like, converted me on Central Texas barbecue. This converted me on brisket.
I have heard that people, you can do a sneak, though, where you can basically order barbecue and get it to go from, like, one or two of these spots, so you don't have to wait in line.
Well, you should consider doing that. I mean,
we're talking about this year. I have a very busy schedule, but also I have a coworker who's committed to doing what we're calling Mouth by Mouthwest.
Oh,
which is just eating our way through Austin, basically just tacos and barbecue, right?
What else would you need in Austin?
I mean, there's probably some other good food in Austin.
I'm sure there's other good food. I'm saying, what else would you need?
So I feel like this is the year where I'm around the right group of people who are going to care enough to be able to at least do one of Law or Franklin. And you're telling me right now Law is the way to go.
I mean, I can't speak. I'm not going to say anything negative about Franklin. The other amazing thing about this, by the way, is, like, I'm telling you, this is La Barbecue quality, I'm sure, in Charleston. The wait was 5 minutes. I got there, like, on the early side for lunch, but 5 minutes. God, like, I was worried whether I was going
to
have time to
do it. Not only did you get to go to Charleston, but you just didn't even have to wait for your barbecue?
Oh, and there was, like, one person in front of me in line at Rodney Scott Barbecue. I went at, like, 5 on a Thursday.
What kind of beers are they serving?
I can't really remember Rodney Scott.
Were you alone in Charleston, or was there anybody with you? God, I could have eaten and drank my way through Charleston so much.
And I was driving a rental car, so I like a company rental car, so I couldn't drink. So that was the downside.
You could have parked. You were staying in a hotel, though.
I could have taken Lyft around.
How big could Charleston be? You could take an Uber anywhere.
It's decently big. I could have done it, but I did not, in fact.
Okay, you're not competing hard enough. Because I was doing
the meal right before the 3 hour in Lewis Barbecue, where they have a full bar, which is the place you'd want to drink. I was doing that right before the 3 hour drive to Charlotte. That was not, God, drinking was not an option on
man,
that. Man,
I want to be alone in Charleston so bad.
You're really obsessed with that. Like, anyone else there?
Like, this is like a Bob Dylan song, Alone in Charleston. It's like a pretty solid single from like the fourth Hold Steady
and record. It's like a huge place. Like, they've got, you know, a large indoor area, they've got the bar, and then they've got a bunch of outdoor seating, which I of course took advantage of because it was like 70 degrees and it was 40 degrees hotter than
I
it was.
Can't hear
it
me
was
these
so
things.
Good. It was amazing. Like, it was honestly,
I would have never made it to the All-Star game. It was like there would have been a little placard that said, "This is me as you." There would have been a little placard that said Tristan Caracino, ESPN, and there would have never been a person sitting behind it.
You know, they don't even have individualized seats, so no one would have been the wiser.
Wow. But
it was one of the best meals I would have done my
All-Star trade grades or whatever from the road. It's like I could have turned it on the freaking All-Star Saturday night from the hotel after full of barbecue and drinks from Charleston. I would have been feeling good.
I mean, the ribs were really good. They were much smaller than the Rodney Scott barbecue ribs.
I'm like
maybe not quite as good
about
as that,
this.
But like they were a distant third. That's how good. The other thing you said, like they don't let you have barbecue sauce. Well, I don't know what they do at Law Barbecue, but at Lewis Barbecue in Charleston, they do in fact have sauces.
I mean, I'm sure they have sauces,
and
but
those
it's
were really good.
Upon. When you're in Texas, if you put barbecue sauce on it,
I understand. But I mean, I wasn't putting
this
on
a
slice of brisket.
There won't be a man in a cowboy hat who gives you a dirty look.
I didn't need it because of the fact that it was so flavorful. It was incredible. Like I will dream of this.
Every
brisket.
Sentence you say is a knife through my heart. I'm never going to go to Charleston. There will never be a reason for me to go to Charleston, no matter how badly I want to, especially alone. Like, that's, for some reason, this is like what I want more than anything, is to be in Charleston alone.
When we turn this into a full-time food podcast, maybe it'll happen.
Alone in Charleston. I'm actually going to make a spinoff podcast on the Peltoncast Network, just called Alone in Charleston.
This is a really depressing podcast.
No, it's not. It is going to be a celebratory podcast.
Okay, so then I went to Charlotte for the weekend. I went to ramen in Charlotte. Tom Haverstraw, who my former ESPN colleague, who is now at NBC Sports and lives in Charlotte, was nice enough to put together a guide for eating in Charlotte. And there weren't many lunch places on that, so I needed lunch on Saturday, and I decided
to
go to...
You mean this just for you or for everybody?
No, for everybody, not just for me.
Is he emailing this out?
Yeah, it's a Google Doc.
Like he's like an Airbnb or whatever?
Something like that. There was a history of Charlotte. It was very educational.
There's a history of Charlotte. Yeah. That's the funny thing is, like, I talk about Charleston all the time, and I'm desperate to go to Charleston. It's like, I don't care about history. I don't care about tourism. I just care about barbecue.
I didn't do a lot of touristy stuff besides eating. I just wasn't there long enough to do it, unfortunately.
Oh, and I also care about ghosts.
I went to Fudo Buddha Ramen in Charlotte, and it was a really cool space. Like, they had a cool vibe, and you know what? The ramen I had was nowhere near as good as any
Charlotte
ramen
level
this,
ramen. Like, I mean, come on.
I didn't try. I only realized afterwards. I went to Rich Cho, you know, the Big Time Bites, Rich Cho's website, which obviously had a bunch of Charlotte places because he was the GM in the Hornets when he started this, and he recommended a different kind of ramen than I had at this place. So maybe that way would have been better. It had smoked salmon in it, which didn't really excite me that much. I'm not a big smoked salmon guy.
Come on, smoked salmon and ramen. Who are you trying to impress here?
The noodles were pretty good, but the broth was very meh. Worse than any of the broths that we've had in Seattle. Mm.
I care so little about your trip to Charlotte. It's crazy.
But the highlight of my trip to Charlotte.
Okay.
Bojangles.
What is Bojangles? It's like a southern style, like fried chicken chain.
It's also Cajun style fried chicken, but headquartered, like based in North Carolina rather than in Louisiana. They have one in the arena.
Okay.
So they give media members like a card that you can use at any of the concessions to eat
for
dinner.
How much are we talking?
$20 a night.
That's not bad. That's not a bad per diem for media members.
So
could you get beers with that?
No.
Okay.
Also, no. So Friday I was not eating because I had had Louis Barbecue for lunch. I was done.
You were never eating again.
Out of commission.
Okay.
Sunday I ate a really late
lunch.
There
were no Arcade Fire members in the celebrity game. You couldn't get beers with the card. You'd already had Louis Barbecue. What's even the point of showing up? Just stay at the hotel.
But Saturday I had the chicken strips and fries at the Bojangles. And they were pretty good for arena food. Like if that were in Portland, I would go to that. Pretty much every year.
Really?
I mean, it's not maybe killer burgers some of the time, but
how would you compare it to Popeyes? It's basically what you're describing to me with.
I mean,
I've heard of this, and I think it was in the Ringer, like top fast food, Bojangles. It's like the North Carolina version of Popeyes.
Yeah,
it's like a less successful Popeyes.
Yeah,
or like a less national Popeyes. Yeah.
No, I think that's fair. Then on Sunday morning, I went to the convention center, which was where the only downtown Bojangles is located, and got a Cajun filet biscuit, which was Tom's recommendation. I feel like the biscuit was not as fresh as if I would have gone to like an actual restaurant location. So it was just kind of mad. But
it's tough. You want to get your best fried chicken at gas stations usually.
I do recommend that. Uh-huh. But again, for arena food, it was pretty incredible, I would have to say.
Pretty incredible?
Yeah, I mean, by arena food is not a high bar.
I think arena food is changing.
It's getting better, but it's still like the Blazers have regressed this year because Bunk sandwiches aren't there anymore.
Bunk's gone?
Yeah. That's a real loss. It's Killer Burger is the only like top tier food option.
They've
left
got that ice cream.
Oh yeah, salt and straw. Yeah, dessert. But I'm saying for like actual like dinner. That's
they've
the
got
only.
Like pizza. We had pizza on the 300 level. That's very high level.
They've got mod. Or what's the name of that? Not mod. What's the name of their one?
God,
Sizzle Pie.
Yeah, Sizzle Pie. I was gonna say they have a location.
Big on that. I had that a few weeks ago.
That's good. You're wrong.
Not at the arena. To each their own. Okay, so...
Well, Damian Lillard didn't have that good of a game anyway.
So then on my drive back from Charlotte to Charleston, I stopped at a Zaxby's.
Wow, you got some Texas toast?
Because I had seen a lot of... no, I didn't get any Texas
you
toast.
You remembered the Huskies playing... Wait, who was
Zaxby's Heart of Dallas Bowl against
Dallas
Nick
Bowl
Mullins in Southern Miss.
Yeah, you had to go to Zaxby's.
There were so many Zaxby's billboards along... the drive from Charleston to Charlotte that like I had to find one, but there were none in like the actual downtown Charlotte area. They were all deep in the suburbs, so I couldn't do it until after I had the rental car.
Charlotte people are so too cool for Zaxby's. Come on.
Well, that's just because they have so many Bojangles, like a lot of Bojangles, man, a lot. There was one right across the street from the Zaxby's that I had to pass up. I was eating relatively light because I was going to go eat in Charleston 3 hours later.
You just had like 3 to 6 chicken wings.
They have like mini chicken strip sandwiches, kind of like the Chicken Littles at KFC. Ooh. So I got 3 of those.
You're eating light?
No, I mean, they're like very small.
Okay.
And those were good, but I don't feel like I got the full Zaxby's experience. I'm going to need to go back.
Yeah. You're going to have to get back to Zaxby's. When is there going to be another All-Star game in the South? Right? Where are they going to be? They're going to be in Chicago next year.
It's going to be in the Midwest. There's going to be a lot of...
Actually going to be a really fun All-Star game, I think.
If it's not 2 degrees.
It won't be.
The next year,
it'll
Chicago...
negative 18.
Chicago, Indianapolis, and Cleveland.
Oh, God. Wow.
Okay.
They're punishing you.
Just New Orleans and LA, man.
Wait, why Chicago, Indianapolis, and Cleveland in 3 consecutive years? Like, mix it up, Adam. This should be a scandal for Adam Silver as commissioner. It's like, you can do Chicago and then New Orleans and then Indianapolis and then whatever, Dallas or something, and then back. You can't
and then
do,
maybe not Cleveland at all.
You can't do... and then just move that team away. But you can't do 3 consecutive years, Chicago, Indianapolis, and Cleveland. Come on! What are the people going to eat?
Yeah. Wait, what are the people going to eat?
Yeah.
No, I think we'll eat fine. I'm not worried about that part of it.
I actually have heard that Indianapolis has an underrated food scene.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you went to Charleston.
Well, they're not going to play the All-Star game in Charleston at the 5,000-seat TD Arena, sadly. As much as I might endorse that decision. Okay, so I drove back down to Charleston on Monday morning. Got there around 2, which was just in time to get to Hominy Grill, which was recommended by Third Pelton brother Tom Lewis, as well as Kevin Arnovitz, who has family in Charleston.
I trust KA and recommendations.
Yeah.
And Tom Lewis also. But.
And got the shrimp and grits there, which is kind of their specialty.
How was that?
It was, I mean, not that I've had a lot of grits to compare
it to. I was
going to
say, I've never once had grits in my entire life, so.
I've had it at Screen Door.
It would be the best grits I've ever had.
But it was incredible in terms of like how creamy the grits were. It was like really, really good. Like very simple, but really, really good. So that was good to cap it off before flying home.
I'm devastated by this whole conversation.
That's what I was going for, actually.
I'm going to have to eat. Like,
going to Austin. Like,
but it's not the same. I'm not going to Austin to gallivant around and have a full day to eat food.
But I didn't have
work to do there.
I didn't have a full day to eat food because it wasn't there for a full day. I was there for like 20 hours tops.
This was Thursday night?
Yes.
Did you have any other business happening?
Oh, I went to the Charleston game.
I suppose that's something.
Yeah, which was fun. Sat courtside.
You didn't go there when it was
fun prospects.
Maybe the busiest weekend in Charleston.
All right, that is a fair point.
Of the year.
That is a fair point.
Like, I just feel like, yes, I'm going to Austin. Like, yes, the food will be good in Austin. Yes, I'm excited about going to Austin when it's 40 degrees in Seattle. But also, it's like, everybody's going to Austin. How many other people are going to Charleston?
A number of people were on my flight from Seattle to Charleston.
I just need to finagle a situation where I'm just randomly going to Charleston for a day. Maybe I should just book a trip, just like one day to Charleston.
I mean, maybe you go from Austin. It's shorter from there to Charleston than it is from here.
I'd like to pitch Mrs. Fantasy Genius on that one.
Yeah, she'll be very excited.
Gone for
that.
4 days and I'm tacking on a Charleston on the end. I think I would have better luck just being like, it's like a Friday or whatever, and I'm just flying to Charleston for the weekend, and I'll be back by Sunday evening.
Okay.
And I'm going to have the best weekend of my life.
Why can't I come to this? Why does it have to be you alone?
The song's called Alone in Charleston by Bob Dylan. Like, it's not called Alone in Charleston with Kevin, quote, Al Pelton.
Can we talk about sports?
I really don't even want to anymore. I don't even want to think about sports anymore. Do they have a soccer team in Charleston that I can go watch?
They have a USL team. They do not play. Maybe in the US Open Cup. But the Charleston Battery.
They're going to have a really good US Open Cup this year.
They used to make some good runs in the US Open Cup, I think. All right, let's talk about sports. Actually, we're going to start talking about politics. Because
Seattle, you love talking about politics.
Seattle City Council member Mike O'Brien announced last week that he will not seek re-election. He becomes the fourth council member to announce not seeking re-election this year, including that now means all four of the yes votes on the Soto Arena street vacation will be off the council because Tim Burgess, of course, left previously. And then the other three, Rob Johnson, O'Brien, and Bruce Harrell, all not running for re-election this year. So that's not the best news for the chances of getting street vacation in the future. But we'll see how different the city council looks by the end of the year.
Yeah, I'm sure they'll be really supportive.
Yeah. On the Sounders front, speaking of the Sounders, lost 2-1 on Portland on Wednesday and by the same score to FC Dallas on Saturday to conclude the Mobile Mini Sun Cup in Tucson. Played strictly the second unit, maybe even third unit against the Timbers, getting a goal from Hindwala Buana in that loss. On Saturday, the starters did start, basically the usual 11 started, were outscored 1-0 before giving way to reserves. Nuhu netted the Sounders' only goal in the late stages of that one. He's still kind of working into shape after getting into camp late. The Sounders are now back home and training in Seattle. Roman Torres was charged with training on Monday after staying home during the Mobile Mini Sun Cup to kind of work through his unhappiness about his playing time and the fact that the Sounders were unable to find a new home for him via trade this offseason.
So he doesn't want to be on the Sounders.
He would like to play more than he will play with the Sounders.
The Sounders don't want him on the team.
No, they want him.
They're fine with him.
If he's unhappy, they would like to get something for him. So okay. That's the position in which we find ourselves now. The Sounders will play their lone home preseason match on Wednesday versus Nacional of Uruguay.
Oh, really?
Nicola Lodero's original club team.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm going to this match.
Yeah.
I had no idea. If I'm going to one preseason match, I'd rather it be against Nacional of Uruguay than FC Dallas or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, that is more exciting that way. Then the Sounders will play at San Jose on Saturday in their final exhibition ahead of their March 2nd opener against FC Cincinnati. I told you I was going to tell you something
on
this podcast
Cincinnati.
That was going to blow your mind.
Yeah.
And that's this time next week, we will be previewing an MLS regular season
that's
match.
The thing that's going to blow my – nothing blows my mind about
the MLS season.
How early the MLS season is.
Brian Schmetzer has said he wants starters on a weekend schedule leading up to that match on a Saturday. So we probably won't see many starters on Wednesday against Nacional. Schmetzer said it would be kind of a mix of starters and reserves in that one. And
wow.
They probably won't play very long, the starters who
I'm
do play.
I'm going to be very disappointed.
You're
going to
be booing constantly. They'll be really disappointed. The Seahawks in Seahawks NFL news. Tuesday was the beginning of the two-week window to use the franchise or transition tags, which runs through March 5th. The Seahawks have not used the franchise tag since franchising Olino Mare in 2010, in a move that was really upsetting to Jim Elmora after he was fired, but are expected this year to likely use it on Frank Clark.
And they're using it on Frank Clark with the intent of signing him to a long-term extension.
Yes.
This is basically just a placeholder. But by this time, 5 months from now or whatever, Frank Clark will be...
Hopefully less than 5 months.
I'm giving it a long window. Frank Clark will be signed to a long-term extension.
I think that is a likely scenario.
He's not playing this one-year franchise year.
Probably not. UW softball opened the 2019 season last weekend in the Puerto Vallarta College Classic, going 4-1, losing 3-2 to Notre Dame in extra innings after a substitution error erased an apparent game-tying run and immediately, abruptly, ended the game because both Huskies, who would have been on base, one of whom would have scored, were called out.
What?
It was, we don't need to get into the weeds of what happened here on the podcast, but weird scenario. The loss dropped the Huskies from number 2 to number 5 in the rankings. They will play a different group of 4 teams in Puerto Vallarta this upcoming weekend, including 2 ranked foes, Arkansas and Mississippi State. Less good news for Husky women's basketball, which suffered a 94-61 loss Friday at Wazoo in a game it seemed like they might have a chance to win. That dropped them to 1-12 in Pac-12 play. This weekend, the Huskies will be at Utah.
They really are like the inverse of
Husky women's basketball. I hadn't thought about that, but yes. At Utah, because they were good in non-conference. At Utah and at Colorado. Sunday's game at Colorado, probably the last realistic shot for the Huskies to get a win this year. Their only Pac-12 win came over Colorado at home. The Buffaloes are 1-13 in Pac-12 play, the lone team behind UW in the standings. And we wrap up with Husky men's basketball, which also played Wazoo last weekend and eked out a 72-70 victory coming from behind in a game that I tried valiantly to watch while also scoring All-Star Saturday Night, creating All-Star Saturday Night performances.
I only had a chance to basically watch. I was monitoring the score for a chunk of this.
While you were at Arashi.
While I was eating ramen, bland ramen. But picked it up.
Your own fault.
You voted against it too. Just be cool.
That's because I said it was hard. I liked Tokyo Yara, but I didn't dislike Arashi.
Picked it up for like the last 5 minutes, right? Just watching it streaming on my phone. And this was a game where, we've talked about this before, we saw the darkness. Like, this was a game that early on...
Katie released the chat, so
you
everyone saw
too
the
early.
Darkness.
Like, I knew...
Oh, obviously, you know that I wasn't serious
but
about that.
When they were down, whether they had 11 at the half...
I thought that they were going to win at that point. Like, Wazoo's shooting was totally fluky.
And you knew that a run was going to happen early in the second half. And it happened. Everything that we expected to happen happened, except for this could have been a blowout for the Huskies. But there was a point deep into the second half when I think it was whomever it was. Somebody hit a 3 to put Wazoo up like 2 points.
Probably Robert Franks at that
point. I assume that I was going to guess it was Robert Franks. Hit that 3, and I was like, oh, this is, like, the Huskies might lose this game.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely still nerve-wracking.
That was the moment where we saw the darkness. It wasn't in the first half. It wasn't when they were down at halftime. It was deep into the second half.
All right, that's fair.
Where there was a legit chance for the Huskies to lose this game. But this team doing something that I feel like we still haven't seen that much of. It's been very impressive this year to come back from these moments, and they get... Dickerson's hitting free throws. Jalen Noel.
Oh, this was Noah Dickerson's best game of the year, I think.
I don't think that's true.
I mean, he's had better statistical games against weak competition, but like, given the setting, given the necessity of his contributions.
The setting of in front of 2,000 people in Pullman, Washington. Well, what is the setting that you're talking
the
about?
The setting of the Huskies coming from behind, that setting.
But really, the key play was a Jalen Noel three-point play near the end of the game. Like, that was the moment, and then he hits the free throw to seal it, to put the Huskies up two, where I'm like, okay, we've got this. All of a sudden, like, the stress that I was feeling dipped huge. And that's basically the win percentage, is my stress in my chest.
I mean, Noah Dickerson only had more points than this one time
in conference. I thought he had one game where he was very
good. He did have 28 against Minnesota. I guess, actually, that was his best game of the year. All right, I'll concede that one. And he did 24 against Texas A&M, although he wasn't very efficient in that game.
Hater.
No, I'm just saying this was a big performance by Noah Dickerson. It was very cool to see. The Huskies' win percentage did dip below 50% at one point in the last 2 minutes, according to KenPom.
It was scary. And if they lose this game, like, all things considered, we're going to talk about where they are in the bracketology, where they are in the rankings. All these things are gone. Like, they're nearing, if they lose
they're not
this game.
Gone.
If they lose, they're basically not receiving votes if they lose this game.
Possibly.
And they're nearing, like, the Husky, everything that they sit on a throne of lies. Because the record in the Pac-12 needs to be so good for them to get whatever Joe Lunardi is predicting them to get.
Yeah.
They can't have a 14-4 Pac-12 record to be a number 7 seed. Right?
No.
They need to basically be at 16-2, 17-1, and go far in the Pac-12 tournament.
If they're going to, yeah, I mean, I think they can still make the NCAA tournament without doing that.
Sure, they can make the NCAA tournament. But going into this game, Joe Lunardi had them as a 7 seed, pretty much the highest we've seen them all year.
Yes.
And they needed to win this game to maintain that status.
I think you probably would have dropped a couple of seed lines if you would have lost it. You would have been down to like a 9.
Whereas a lot of teams could lose a game and drop one seed or whatever.
Well, it's also which game you lose. I mean, Wazoo is, you know, even though they've been playing better lately, even though they swept the Arizona schools,
that's the
they're still overwhelmingly
every
likely.
Loss is a bad loss in the Pac-12. The only loss that's not a bad loss is the one that they lost.
Wazoo's overwhelmingly likely to finish 11th in the conference. Like, losing...
Yeah, that's why you can't lose this damn game!
Losing at Stanford isn't the same thing as losing at Wazoo.
I think it's more or less the same thing.
I do not agree with that assessment.
To the pollsters, there is Washington, and there's Arizona State, and then there's everybody else.
Yeah.
Which, they're not wrong.
No.
Like, there's degrees of badness.
First off, they're still overrating the Huskies, who fell 3 spots in Ken Pom down to number 38 this week.
Oh, God.
Okay. But are now projected to go 16-2 in conference play. And Ken clinched the Pac-12 title outright this weekend.
Wait, really?
Yes. So, I mean, it's not going to happen. Here's what would happen to happen. The Huskies would have to sweep at home. Oregon State would have to get swept at the LA schools. And Arizona State would have to lose at home to either Stanford or Cal.
Oh, okay.
So that's not all going to
happen. They're not that far off.
And that's to clinch it outright. They could clinch a tie by sweeping and having Oregon State lose one of the two games.
But we don't care about clinching the Pac-12.
But I'm just saying.
It would be nice, but we know that winning the Pac-12 doesn't mean anything. This isn't the NFC West. This isn't guaranteeing you a home playoff game.
But it's all they can
do. Winning the Pac-12 means so little. We've seen firsthand what winning the Pac-12 means, and it does not guarantee you an NCAA tournament bid.
No.
They have to be 16-2, or better.
Well, there's only one better than that they can get. That's bad. As you mentioned, number 7, still a 7 seed in the latest ESPN bracketology. ASU teetering, but among the last 4 in after last weekend. Huskies 4th among teams also receiving votes in the AP poll. Next team out in the coaches poll, although that's partially because there is a tie for 25th in the coaches poll. Basically, the pollsters have decided that there are 26 good teams and everyone else is kind of a tier below
them. And
the
Huskies are not one of those 26 good teams. No, they're not. Okay.
But you never know if they sweep this weekend. Maybe they get ranked.
You never know.
This weekend, they will be hosting the Rocky Mountain Schools at Heck Ed, starting Wednesday night against Utah, who comes in number 1 in offensive rating in Pac-12 play. shooting 56% on twos and 40% on threes. Numbers that they did not match against the Huskies zone in Salt Lake City earlier this year when they shot a season worst 6 of 30 on three-pointers in a Husky blowout win. The Utes are, you know, still a fairly mediocre team because of the fact that although they have been so good offensively and over the course of the year, Ken Pom ranks them 21st in adjusted offensive efficiency, they rank 270th in adjusted defensive efficiency.
And similar to Wazoo.
Yes. Yeah, that's a decently similar. 10th in Pac-12 defensive rating.
The Huskies' offense didn't strike me as really taking advantage of Wazoo in that game.
It wasn't a great performance by the UW offense. Excellent three-point shooting for Utah, led by senior guards Parker Van Dyke, who's at 43% from beyond the arc, and Cedric Barfield, who's at 39%. Their front court players are all high-percentage finishers, but offer very little shot blocking aside from seven-footer Jace Johnson. So, you know, this I think a key for the Huskies, if they can get Jace Johnson in foul trouble and then just parade to the rim, that's how they win this game comfortably. I mean, I'm always scared of, you know, Larry Kostobiak's offense. He's got a good approach to things. You know, I don't know that they have the ideal personnel to play against the Huskies because they don't really have anyone who's like a front court player who's a good passer and shooter to play at the high post. You know, so that's...
Has any team really done that this year?
Yeah, a team did that.
Just Arizona State?
Arizona State. Wazoo did some elements of that. I thought Wazoo's game
plan
was pretty
good. The
high post scares me. But they just... To me, it was more shot-making than it was the quality of shots that Wazoo was getting.
The game that scares me this weekend is not necessarily Utah, but Colorado, who followed them after that.
Colorado comes in the hottest team in Pac-12 play, having won the last five games, beating Oregon at home, sweeping the LA schools on the road, and then sweeping the Arizona schools at home last weekend. They are kind of the inverse, not exactly the inverse, but a more defensive-minded team, certainly, than Utah. They're number three in defensive rating in Pac-12 play, fairly average on offense. They are the conference's best defensive rebounding team, but making just 31% of their threes so far in conference play. Their best three-point shooter by far is their center, Lucas Seward, at 40%. The key for the Huskies will probably be keeping point guard McKinley Wright out of the paint. He's making 61% of his twos and is fifth in the Pac-12 in assist rate, but Wright played just 12 minutes against the Huskies in Boulder in a game the Huskies obviously won due to a shoulder injury that kept him out the following week in a loss to Utah. He is now fine and has been part of this run for the Buffs.
This was the weekend that we were in LA, right, in early January?
That is correct.
And the Huskies got an early lead against Colorado and then kind of squandered it but then pulled away at the end. I was watching with Jake Wan.
But you were paying closer attention than I was then.
That was on Saturday night.
Yes.
Yeah. It felt like a bit of a scary game.
Yeah. But
bringing it back home, they should win this weekend.
I mean, the most likely scenario, the better than 50% scenario, is that they sweep these two games.
They looked very good, I felt like, against Arizona. But then at Arizona State, they felt a little bit exposed. And then Wazoo, we just really need to see, is this a rejuvenated Wazoo team? Or had the Huskies regressed a little bit?
I mean, if there's one thing that concerns me, now they are down to sixth in conference play in opponent two-point percentage, basically around average. So like previously, they were really shutting down teams inside the arc and outside the arc. Now it's just inside the arc that they're doing it. Now, I have started to come around to the idea that the Huskies' opponent three-point percentage is a sustainable thing.
It's just outside the arc that they're shutting teams down.
Yes.
But not inside.
Yes. They've been fairly average inside the arc. And because Arizona State and Wazoo in the first half, of this game shot 63% on twos before regressing to 33% in the second half.
It'll be interesting to see. I mean, we haven't seen them at home, right?
No, they've been on the road for three games in a row here, two weekends.
These were three consecutive games in the road where they looked worse in probably two out of the three. Maybe coming back home means they settle down a little bit and have a couple of comfortable victories.
Should be good crowds, I would expect, for this game, even though it's an 8 p.m. start on a Wednesday, which is not real ideal. Still, I think, you know, the Huskies have started to capture the attention of the city. I had a conversation about the Huskies with the guy checking me out at Costco today since I was wearing my UW beanie.
About Husky basketball?
Yeah, he was asking about Jalen Noel, like talking about will Jalen Noel leave? And it, like, not knowing that, like, I know a lot about whether Jalen Noel is getting interest from NBA scouts, and the answer is no. I had a lot of conversations with people.
Wow, you're just throwing water on everybody.
Well, it's good water.
Costco checkers, Jalen Noel.
I had a lot of conversations with people in the NBA about Matisse Thybulle this weekend. Jalen Noel's name did not come up once.
Wow, people are fired up about Matisse, though.
Yeah, it's a chance he sneaks into the first round. That could happen.
Oh my God, Matisse Thybulle is a first-round player.
Could happen.
Can't play offense. First-round player, though.
In a piece that will be up by the time you listen to this, got a random shout-out in my Zion Williamson piece.
Yeah, of course he did. That makes sense.
Ah, best steal and block rates in the country. It's Zion Williamson.
If Matisse Thybulle is drafted by the Spurs, they have a first-round draft pick.
He shoots too many threes for the Spurs. They would never take him.
They want more long jumpers.
Yeah.
They want a little bit more of the LaMarcus type.
Yeah.
If he's drafted by the Spurs, he's an all-star within 3 years.
You didn't say no to that. No, I mean, he's probably not going to be an all-star. This does remind me, though.
He's an all-star at some point during his career.
I was reviewing some old tweets, searching through some old tweets of mine the other day, and reviewing the tweet where I said that Matisse Thybulle was going to have a better NBA career than DeJounte Murray.
Is that unheard of at this point?
It's not unheard of, but let me tell you.
You didn't say Marquise Chris?
Oh, I should have said Marquise
Chris. That's guaranteed.
Yes. DeJounte Murray has had a fine NBA career prior to the ACL injury that's kept him out this season.
Right now.
He set the bar much higher than I was thinking at the time that tweet happened. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, you were hating on DeJounte. We all remember. We all remember you were hating on DeJounte.
If DeJounte Murray had gone to Phoenix and Marquise Chris had gone to San Antonio, things might have turned out differently.
And if Matisse Thybulle goes to San Antonio, he's an all-star within the first 3 years. He's
probably not an all-star. He just becomes Danny Green. So he's like really valuable.
But is he Danny Green?
No one realizes it.
Or is he Kawhi Leonard?
No, he's probably not Kawhi Leonard. No, you can't just do the mind exploding thing and have that be the case.
On that note.
thanks for listening.
Thanks.